lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of a very interesting Grand Prix. Well, probably very uninteresting Grand Prix, I should say. Every week on the podcast, we always talk about how it'd be nice to get a bit of rain and to keep things, you know, let's have some rain, keep things spiced up and stuff. That was a little bit too much rain, wasn't it? We now have the shortest F1 race in history. The Belgium Grand Prix for 2021 was 3 minutes and 27 seconds long.
Yeah, I spoke to Nicky, who provides our pro stats from At Lights Out yesterday, and he said it was a miserable race, but it makes the stat collection really interesting, and we'll hear from him a little bit later on. I thought there were some highlights of the weekend, to be fair, but yeah, big washout. It was like all of Europe's rain was over the Spa circuit for the entirety of the day. You know, when they started it behind the safety car and then abandoned it, the conditions, I thought, were actually not too bad. And when they started it 3 hours later under the safety car again, the conditions were three times as worse. It was just never going to happen, was it?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because obviously we can't help the weather. I think they got a lot of things wrong that weekend, and I think there will be a lot of rule changes and a lot of stuff looked at and changed and evolved for the future, shall we say. But, you know, you can't help the weather, and at the end of the day, that is a dangerous track. You know, Eau Rouge is really dangerous as a part of that track, and we saw that horrendous accident in the W Series. Great to see they were all okay, but it just goes to show, you know, when you see an accident like that and they're all piling into each other, nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see any sort of accident or injury. Of course, it is entertainment at the end of the day. So I understand the reason behind not racing. It was frustrating for everybody, wasn't it? And I think this, you know, they were just talking about this on Sky. Do we need a faster, as they call it, pace car in America? Because the issue we have is you know, the car at the front is just too slow. So none of the Formula One cars can get up to speed. And of course, the spray off the tires and those cars is just immense. And no one can see anything. They've got no windscreen wipers, obviously. So it makes it very dangerous. But I've never seen a Formula One race where you're kind of watching it and you think, right, the minute the rain stops, you know, they'll get out there, they'll clear that away and it'll all be good and we'll get some sort of Grand Prix underway here. And it just went on and on and on. The commentators certainly earned their money that day, didn't they?
Yeah, I thought Sky, you always do a good job when they're covering delays. They just fill it with really interesting stuff and they send their reporters out. Karen Chandhok, I thought, did a really good job. And the commentators themselves, Martin and that, did great. I think the issue that most of the teams were unhappy with was the fact that you can declare a race after two laps under the safety car. So effectively, no one's allowed to race, but it's a classified race result. I think that is the biggest gripe from the teams and the drivers. So through no fault of his own, Lewis Hamilton's lead in the World Championship has now been cut to 3 points. He wasn't allowed to defend that lead. Do you know what I mean? So I think that was the main issue with that. Mm-hmm. Now, I pulled a little bit of a blinder here, and I'm thinking many F1 fans probably did the same. So I knew that the race could be classified after two laps, but I didn't know that those two laps could be completed under the safety car. So when they red flagged it, I'm thinking, right, if they get two laps out of this race, then they're going to classify it. And then when Martin Brundle on the commentary said they can do those two laps under the safety car, I thought, well, that means the order ain't changing. And there was a brilliant bet on George Russell getting on the podium. And I thought, right, I'll try this. Now, I only put 20 quid on it and won 75 quid. In hindsight, I should have put £1,000 on the thing, but you're never quite sure, are you? But I did that, and they honoured it because, of course, it's a classified race after two laps, even though it's behind the safety car. I think that's the thing that's freaking out the drivers. I mean, you can't change the weather. I think everyone agreed that it was too dangerous to run, and everyone agreed that it was too dangerous to let them race. Maybe they need to come up with a rule change where it says, listen, we only classify a race if at least 25% of the event is run as a race without a safety car. That's currently not in the rules. Maybe that's something they need to look at. Oh, and guess what? The forecast for this weekend at Zandvoort, rain on Sunday.
Ugh, more rain. Okay. Normally I'd go, yay, rain, brilliant. It's going to spice things up. Now I'm like, ugh, no more rain, please, no more rain. I think my favourite quote was Fernando Alonso. who was 11th on the on the grid, and he said, "It's shocking. I'm P11. The first idiot in a way. I was not allowed to fight for points, but they gave points anyway. Makes no sense." I love the fact he's called himself an idiot because he's like in P11, but that's exactly the point you were just making, isn't it? You know, Lewis couldn't defend his points. People like Fernando are sat in 11th. There's no way they can score points. George Russell only had to just drive the car around and stay on the track and he would score points. And it, like you say, it's frustrating, isn't it? Because it's changed a lot. And this half point thing does my brain in as well.
Oh, Carlos Sainz got half a point for Sunday.
Yeah. But when you look at the points at the end of it and you're like, oh, it's you know, 139.5 versus 128.5. And you've always got that 0.5 now. That drives me nuts. My OCD hates that. But yeah, I think, like I say, you know, they couldn't run the race. It was too risky. It was too wet. But they did get a lot of stuff wrong. I think the fans do need some sort of refund as well if they were there, or, you know, credit towards next year's race or something as a bit of a sweetener. Because, you know, they sat there for, some of them sat there for 8-9 hours in that rain. It looked horrific. And the reporters and the commentators were all talking about how cold they were and they couldn't feel their hands, couldn't feel their feet. You know, that's not great for the fans to sit in that, particularly if they've waited a couple of years, you know, because obviously we haven't had proper races with fans because of COVID as well. So they might have waited a few years for this. This could have been a big build-up race. And, you know, and ironically, last year we had the Belgian Grand Prix with no fans. This year we had fans, but no Belgian Grand Prix. So it's just bizarre, isn't it, how it's all kind of worked out.
I think there were some positives to take from the weekend, if you could take any. You know, qualifying on Saturday was really entertaining. I think British drivers always excel in the wet because basically they grew up go-karting in the wet in the UK. When I raced in the British Pro Kart Series, if it rained, hardly anyone on the grid had wet tyres because you couldn't afford them. So we went out and raced on slicks in the wet, and that was a skill in itself. And I think British drivers learned that from a very early age. So I'm convinced Lando Norris would have put it on pole if he had not had that crash in Eau Rouge. High-speed crash, kind of a driver error, I think, but I think there was a bit of aquaplaning perhaps involved as well. And another positive, could you not love Sebastian Vettel anymore? I mean, the guy's just, I'm falling in love with him all over again. I always liked him as a driver and as a person. But when he stopped to make sure Lando was okay, I thought, oh, this is brilliant, you know? That's the Seb that we know and love. And he's just endearing himself to the fans even more now. And the other positive from the weekend, I think, was the Twitter feeds of all the teams and drivers. You know, the video clip of Seb playing football in the Haas garage with Mick Schumacher. I just, again, could you love the guy anymore?
Yeah, there was, like you say, so many videos and clips, wasn't there, over the weekend that just put a smile on your face. And everyone was so bored. They were coming up with creative things to put online and stuff to do. But you're right, you know, Vettel is, he's like flicked a switch this year and become an even greater guy. I think I commented on something online saying he's quickly becoming my favourite driver because everything he's doing outside of the car, we know he's a brilliant driver. He's a four-time world champion. We know he's had an amazing career. But he's just like flicked a switch the last couple of years, where he's just become the nicest guy in the world. And he's still, you know, he's still a ruthless racing driver. He's still very good on track and stuff. But like you say, he's picking up rubbish at one Grand Prix. He's checking on Lando at this Grand Prix. He's helping out Mick Schumacher. He was giving him tips on how to change gear when he drove his dad's car. You saw that on the Sky coverage as well. And he's just doing so many good things at the moment. And I got a lot of time for Seb. But yeah, he's quickly becoming one of my top three drivers just for the fact that he's so great, you know, out of the car as well. What a really, really nice guy.
Yeah, definitely. It looks as though it's going to be announced in Monza that Kimi Raikkonen is retiring from Formula One, which is a real shame because I love him as a character as well. You know, the Iceman, who very rarely smiles, but also has a sort of cheeky sense of humour underneath it all, we think, from what we've seen. He's had a stunning career, hasn't he, Kimi? And not so good over the last couple of years, but not in a brilliant piece of machinery, to be fair. But yeah, looks like that's going to be announced by Monza. And the speculation now about Bottas is reaching fever pitch. Very strange body language when him and Russell were both asked about their futures. Bottas saying, you know, I might know, I might not know, but I'm not telling you either way. And Russell saying he'd had conversations over the summer break with Mercedes, but he couldn't say anything either. I think, you know, one of the pundits actually at the weekend said, well, would you want to tell Bottas now that he's not got a seat for next year because you need him to be a rear gunner for Lewis? And if he gets, you know, really narky about a decision like that, will he play ball? And the answer's probably no. He probably won't. He'll just be out for himself to the end of the season to try and prove to another team that he's got the goods.
Yeah, I feel like with Bottas, he's under a Mercedes contract, and I feel like what's happening here is they are taking George for next year. I feel like that's 99% going to happen now. I think he smiled a bit in the press conference, and I think he out the two drivers, the body language to me said that George is the one that's sorted in the Merc next year and Bottas isn't. And I feel like what Mercedes are doing is going, right, okay, we need to look after Bottas because he's still under our contract. He's still one of our guys. So let's get him a seat before we announce it. And my guessing is either Williams to replace Russell or Alfa Romeo to replace Kimi Raikkonen. I think they're the two options. And, you know, more likely to go to Williams, I suppose, because that's a Mercedes car. But is his manager stepping in and going, oh, hang on a minute, we've got a good opportunity at Alfa Romeo here? You know, you just don't know. But I feel like that's what they're waiting for. I feel like they're waiting for Bottas to be signed, sealed and delivered somewhere else. Then they'll announce the both moves in one go almost and say that, you know, George is going to be in the Mercedes next year and Bottas is going to be here. There was speculation he got himself a brand new road car, didn't he, this week, and Mercedes were congratulating him, and there was speculation.
Leaving present.
Yeah, leaving present from Mercedes, and then someone else said, no, that means he's staying if he's buying that Mercedes, and again, it's all speculation, isn't it? But I would be gobsmacked if George Russell isn't in that Mercedes next year, and gobsmacked if Bottas is. Those are my guesses, either Williams or Alfa Romeo for Bottas next year.
Yeah, Ross Brawn, the chief of Formula One, said, and I quote, "The only decision for Mercedes is to put Russell alongside Lewis in the car for next year." I mean, Lewis will have a say in this. He is the number one driver at Mercedes, and we've said many times on the podcast in the past, you know, does Lewis want to be shown up in his twilight years by a young rookie or a young gun who's keen and fast like George Russell is? Does he want to be out-qualified by him on a weekly basis? Does he want to be outdriven in races by him? Probably not, because, you know, love him or hate him, Lewis Hamilton's definitely got an ego.
I feel like that is what's going to happen as well. I feel like George is going to come in and properly show him how it's done. Not saying that Hamilton's a bad driver. Obviously, he isn't. He's a multiple world champion. He's a great driver. But I think he's going to keep Hamilton on his toes way more than Bottas is if that gets announced. When I was doing some racing in the MR2 championship a few years ago, a couple of years before I raced, so this is probably about 5 or 6 years ago now, George Russell did a couple of races in the MR2 series because he needed to get some racing for his license, because you have to have a certain amount of races on your license to get the next kind of license up. And he was obviously going through super license eventually, so he was getting these races, and he actually raced a few races in the MR2 championship. And I've seen some pictures of him just sort of getting out in and out of these MR2s. And it was like a year before I was racing them. And you think, how weird is that, that, you know, we've driven the same kind of car on the same tracks, and now he's potentially going to be in a Mercedes next year and potentially a Formula One world champion at some point. It's bizarre, but yeah, he's kind of gone up the ladder. He got in that MR2 and drove the wheels off it, but you could almost tell as well that he wasn't there to really show off. He was there to just get a couple of races under his belt so he could get the next license and move on, kind of thing. But yeah, really weird to sort of pass someone at that level, you know, doing for what for me was a hobby.
The only other thing, the highlight of the weekend, I suppose, on race day was Sergio Perez crashing it on the lap to the grid, which we've seen Max Verstappen do in Hungary last year. Of course, they managed to fix the car. I love the drama of Formula One when they got on the radio and said to the FIA, listen, that car's not safe, we're going to withdraw from the race. And they said, yeah, okay, fine. And then when the red flag went down and there was the long delay, you could see glimmers of the Red Bull garage working really hard. Did you see the clip of the mechanic who ran full pelt into the back of the wagon out back and tripped over everything just to grab a part to fit to that car? I love that drama. And I love the drama when Michael Massey said, listen, we're going to have a word with the stewards here. And the fact that the guy from Red Bull was saying, well, listen, you're telling me that the race start has been suspended. So therefore, if the race hasn't started, we can get him back in, can't we? And they came back and said, yeah, you can start him from the pit lane.
Yeah, I mean, incredible. And the Red Bull guys, you know, that should have been a 3-4 hour job, they were saying on Sky. They did it in under an hour. I mean, those mechanics are incredible when you think of what they did with Max's car, you know, last year as well. And it's just, mechanics can do some incredible stuff. And I feel like Red Bull is an amazing team. I think the people, the mechanics, the management, the drivers, they are a real team. And there's, you know, they're always the team that's got the music playing when they're packing everything up at the end of the day. And they just seem like a really, really good place to work, the Red Bull team. And yeah, hats off to them, because they kind of saved Sergio's race there. I mean, obviously he couldn't do anything with it because he couldn't score any points. But, you know, at one point I was getting quite excited thinking, wow, is he going to start ninth? And then they said, no, he's got to start from the pit lane. But I was thinking, you know, if this is a proper race, he can work his way through here. This could be exciting, but sadly, we never got to see that.
Yeah, I was boring my wife with stories from my past. So 15 years ago, I used to work for a company called Playscape Racing, and they took a fleet of pro karts round the world and staged 24-hour races, and some of them were a really big deal. And I was with them as race director, and they had their own team of mechanics that flew to all of these events, and we did one in Oman about 12, 13 years ago. And as race director, I'm basically like Michael Massey. I'm in charge of, you know, the racing, the protocols, the rules, all that sort of stuff. And towards the end of this 24-hour race, the team sponsored by Emirates, and they'd flown in drivers from all over the world who were fantastic at what they did. And we're talking about twin-engine pro karts. So they've got Honda engines over both of the rear wheels, so powered by two engines. But, of course, just a go-kart, so they've got, you know, linkages to the throttle pedal, to the engines and all that sort of stuff. Fairly simple. And towards the end of the 24-hour race, with about 3 hours to go, the Emirates team, who were leading by about 15 laps, cracked their chassis. So according to the rules, if you crack your chassis, you can buy another one, but all the parts from the original chassis have to be taken off and fitted to the new chassis. So that includes things like pedals and wheels and tyres and engines and all the linkages between the brake lines and the throttle and all of that. So I watched in awe in the garage because I had to supervise this change as five or six mechanics swapped all this stuff around. At one point, they were throwing engines from one side of the garage to the other, catching them, bolting them onto the new chassis and just getting it done. Now, this is karting. It's nowhere near as advanced as Formula One, but it does show you the sort of skill that any sort of motorsport mechanic possesses. They changed the engine and all the stuff from one chassis to another in under 2 minutes and got the team back out, and they won the race. It was amazing.
Incredible, isn't it? Like you say, it's an art to watch that happen. And I just think that, you know, Mercedes and Red Bull and Ferrari have got some of the world's best engineers and the world's best minds, and these people that come up with the race, what they're going to do. Are they going to do, you know, A, B, C or D? And they have all these different options. And just to come up with all these kind of ideas throughout the race, I just find it absolutely fascinating.
By the way, when I told my missus that story, she'd already sat through 2 hours of Red Flag and she went, right, that's it. I'm going out. Right, let's get some stats. Nikki has all the stuff to report on the washed out Belgian Grand Prix. But of course, when we have something different in Formula One, it throws up all kinds of different facts and figures. Here he is, looking back on the weekend just gone.
At the shortest ever Formula One race, Russell records his first podium and Mazepin sets the longest, fastest lap time since 1976. Here are the top statistics from the 2021 Belgian Grand Prix weekend. For 30 years, the 1991 Australian Grand Prix held the accolade of being the shortest ever Formula One race. That changed at the 2021 Belgian Grand Prix, the result of which was decided after just a handful of laps behind the safety car. Due to the red flag procedure, the official classification of the race shows that it ran to just one lap, with Max Verstappen victorious in a time of 3 minutes and 27 seconds. That makes the 2021 Belgian Grand Prix 21 minutes shorter than the 1991 Australian Grand Prix, where racing was called off after 24 minutes. The 2021 Belgian Grand Prix was only the 6th F1 race in which half points were awarded. It last happened at the 2009 Malaysian Grand Prix, which was called off due to similarly wet conditions. And another rare occurrence, with the race being red flagged, this is the first time that 3 consecutive Grand Prix have been red flagged since the 1990 Belgian, Italian and Portuguese Grand Prix were stopped. Max Verstappen took his 16th race win, tying Stirling Moss as the driver to have won the most races without winning the title. Moss's record has been broken 4 times previously by Alan Prost, Nigel Mansell, Damon Hill and Nico Rosberg, all 4 being drivers who went on to win the title later in their career. Verstappen is the 28th different driver to win at Spa and the first to do so in a Honda-powered car since Ayrton Senna in 1991. George Russell qualified for the 2021 Belgian Grand Prix in 2nd place. He recorded the first front-row start for a British Williams driver since Damon Hill at the 1996 Japanese Grand Prix. Russell went on to finish in 2nd place, recording the first podium finish of his Formula One career. He's the 215th driver to finish on the podium at round of the World Championship. And he's the first driver to record his maiden podium finish at the Belgian Grand Prix since Ivan Capelli in 1988. This was the Williams team's first podium finish since the 2017 Azerbaijan Grand Prix and their best result at Spa since Jacques Villeneuve finished as runner-up in the 1996 Belgian Grand Prix. And finally, one of the most surprising statistics from the Belgian Grand Prix was that Nikita Mazepin set the fastest lap of the race. His lap time of 3 minutes and 18 seconds is the slowest time with which a driver has set the fastest lap of a race since Jody Scheckter lapped the Nordschleife layout of the Nürburgring at the 1976 German Grand Prix in a time of over 7 minutes.
Nice one, Nicky. Thank you, of course. He is back across all the race weekends with loads of stats and facts. You can find him at Lights Out on Twitter. And of course, this weekend is the first race at Zandvoort. It's been 36 years since we've raced at the Netherlands in an F1 race. So exciting to see what the track's going to be like. Exciting to see what the Max fans are going to be like, because they are going to go bananas. And like you say, some rain expected this weekend as well. So it could be a proper eventful first Grand Prix at the Netherlands for 36 years as well.
Yeah, they've got a long banked corner at that track, and I wonder how that will handle in wet conditions. Some breaking news coming in. This is a rumour now which is being confirmed by multiple sources on the on the internet in the Formula One world. Russell will be going to Mercedes, Bottas will be going to Alfa Romeo, Kimi retires, and the Williams seat, Alex Albon, their first choice in that seat, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, that all kind of makes sense, doesn't it? That all adds up, and it's what I was saying earlier on. I feel like Bottas is either going to go to Williams or Alfa Romeo. The thing that was leaning me towards Williams was the fact they've got a Mercedes engine, and I thought that might work out. The thing that was leading me away from Williams is the fact that he's been there before. That's where he came from, wasn't it? So I thought, is he going to want to go back to the team he came from as such? But that would all make sense. That would all add up. I mean, I am convinced George is in that Mercedes next year. He just seems happy, smiley. He seems like he's been given the news he wants, and Bottas seems like he's been given the news he doesn't want. So yeah, that all ties in for me.
So, Zandvoort this weekend, going to be interesting. Obviously, a sea of orange with Max Verstappen fans at their first true home race, although Belgium is almost like a home race for them. The trucks left Belgium yesterday. They will arrive at the Zandvoort circuit tonight or early tomorrow, set up for the second race on this triple header that we're doing at the moment, which will be Monza the week after. So, looking forward to that. It is a new circuit. I've driven it on the PlayStation. It's a bit fiddly. Some of the corners are a little bit fiddly and off camber and stuff. There's a couple of decent straights, and they've got that bank corner towards the end of the lap, which I mentioned. So I think it's going to be interesting. If we get wet weather on the Sunday, let's hope it doesn't ruin things. Let's hope it spices stuff up, because I remember texting you Sunday morning just gone saying this could be the best Formula One race we've ever seen. Wet conditions and so many drivers out of position on the grid. It could have been brilliant. It's a real shame that it wasn't. Let's hope Zandvoort is this weekend. Predictions? Well, I think Norris is doing really well at the moment. I wouldn't shy away from him being on the podium. I think Hamilton and Verstappen, you know, you'd have to say Verstappen was favourite for this race.
Yeah, again, like you say, you know, he's going to have the home crowd advantage. I feel like Red Bull are just on top at the moment. I think I said on the last podcast that I feel like they were going to do well in Spa. And obviously when he qualified, you know, I kind of expected him to get pole, and I expected him to try and win. Obviously, weird circumstances for the win. But yeah, I expect the same again. I think Red Bull are on fire again at the minute. I think their confidence is back, and I can see Max on pole, and I can see Max winning the race as well. I think if Hamilton does win this race, I don't think the crowd are going to enjoy that very much. There might be a bit of booing there, but yeah, I think Max is going to do this. And I think, like you say, it's exciting. It's a new Grand Prix. It's always, when it's new and unknown and it's a new track, it's always quite exciting to kind of see what we get.
Yeah, well, we'll look forward to this coming weekend. We'll be back this time next week to review the Dutch Grand Prix. In the meantime, take care.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.